It is my pleasure to introduce to you Catherine Davis, public speaker and civil rights champion. She works with the Black Pro-Life Coalition, the Network of Politically Active Christians, and the Frederick Douglass Foundation in an ongoing effort to educate Americans about the issues that are impacting the Black community. Catherine was featured in numerous TV and radio newspapers, including The New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, ABC World News, NPR, and through the entire blogosphere. Her topic, personhood and genocide, how they connect in the fight for life.
Thank you. And I am nervous. I don't know why. You know, everybody thinks I'm this tough guy, which I am kind of, sort of. But I am so full from this weekend, and I want to thank Molly for asking me to be a part of this historic event. This has just been phenomenal, and I have learned so much. Even though I've been an activist for a very long time, like Reggie's presentation just broke me up, and I have learned so much. So thank you, Molly, for inviting me, and thank you for pulling together the pro-life community in an event like this. This is awesome. I'm going to talk to you today about personhood and why personhood is important. People look at me when I talk about personhood like I have antenna growing out of my head, like, why are you talking about that? Why is that even an issue? We need to have all of these incremental laws that are going to just chip away at abortion. And they asked me, don't you remember slavery? It took 100 years for slavery to end in this country. So why are you being so impatient and pushing this? And I tell people the difference between slavery and abortion is that the slave owners weren't killing their slaves, because slaves had value. Slaves determined their economic status back then. The more slaves you had, the more wealthy you were considered. And yes, there were occasional slaves that were beaten to death. You know, I know Uncle Tom's Cabin. I understand that. But that was really the exception and not the rule. But in abortion, we are killing 4,000 human beings a day. And there's something wrong with that. You know, in January, we marked the 42nd year of legally killing babies in this country. 42 years. And I went to the march in Washington. And usually I don't go to Washington. I stay home in Georgia, because Georgia Right to Life has a silent memorial walk. And I so appreciate that silence now, after having attended the one in D.C., because there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pro-lifers there, but the atmosphere was too frivolous. It was too, ah, ha, 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 and too much chanting and, you know, I love babies, yes, I do, I love babies, how about you? And I do love babies. But that wasn't the occasion to talk about my love for babies in that fashion. Because we have forgotten that we are talking about tiny little human beings. We are talking about people. They are not objects. They are people. So we have to talk about personhood. Where do I point this? Oops. I got to make it go back. Okay, go back. We're talking about personhood, which is the quality or condition of being an individual person. Now, the only time that we're really a clump of cells, if you look at that slide, you will see, is at 4 days. How many women knew at 4 days that you were pregnant? I knew that I was pregnant day one, but that's usually the exception. Y'all are looking at me like, how you know you were pregnant day one? I knew I was pregnant day one because I had been celibate up until that point. Till the day that my baby daddy convinced me one more time, just one more time. And that one more time, I made my beautiful daughter. She's now 26, but anyway, that's how I know the exact day. But the only time that we are a clump of cells, as you can see on this slide, is at 4 days. And 99.99999% of women have no idea at 4 days that they're pregnant. So we have to talk about personhood, but we have to put it in perspective. We have to go back and talk about the key players in this debate for life. So we have to talk about Charles Darwin. You all know Charles Darwin, Origin of the Species, right? How many of you know the subtitle of his book? Origin of the Species, The Preservation of the Favored Races. Darwin's whole movement was designed to terminate the lives of those that they felt weren't worthy of life, the dysgenics, the disabled, those that they felt should not be allowed to live. And he knew that the only way that he could promote that dogma was to remove God from the discussion. So he didn't want to hear about the Imago Dei. He didn't want to hear that we are made in the image and likeness of God. Instead, he said, no, 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 we evolved. You know, we came from nothing into something. I still don't understand the logic behind that, but I guess it was a bang or something in his brain because he was a little bit crazy. But with Darwinism came euthanasia, came abortion, came birth control. That's what Darwin gave us. And he found a willing and able companion in Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger is the mother of birth control in this nation. She actually used one of her many husbands' money to help develop the birth control pill as we know it today. And she decided that clearly there is a race of people. Just like Haman in the book of Esther said, you know, there's this race of people, and they don't bow down like we do, and they don't do worship the gods that we worship. Well, Margaret Sanger said, there is this race of people, and that race of people needs to be controlled. We can't let them keep contributing as weeds and misfits in America's garden. We must do something to control them. So she launched the Negro Project. How many of you know what the Negro Project is? Now I see some pastors in here. Margaret Sanger went and searched out men like Pastor Moss and Pastor Butts and said, let me pay you to go and tell black women that they want to evenly space their children, that they never want to have to worry about the slave master raping them again and them having to bear his old child. So they can do that with birth control. And she paid ministers and she paid doctors. And she and Clarence Gamble of the Procter & Gamble fortune launched this project in the United States to control the black birth rate. But when they did it, they said there is great danger that the project will fail because the Negroes will think it a plan of extermination. So let's appear to let the colored run it. And what do we have today? God bless them. We have a Jesse Jackson who sold his birthright to try to be president, the first black president of the United States. He was pro-life. He used to write for National Right to Life back when National Right to Life was really interested in ending abortion in this nation. I can't say that's their interest today, but they used to have an interest in ending abortion in this nation, and they employed the likes of a Jesse Jackson, who wrote prolifically about abortion having a genocidal effect if it was allowed to run rampant in the black community. And then he wanted to be president and changed his tune. He is the personification of the Negro Project. And then we had Alan Guttmacher, the father of abortion on demand in this country, Planned Parenthood's statistical arm. He, in 1970, when abortion was legalized in New York, he single-handedly changed the definition of a woman's health to include her psychological health so that he could stretch that definition to enable him and Planned Parenthood, because he was the president of Planned Parenthood, to have abortion on demand and killing babies at will. And then we had the good old Rockefeller family. Oh my gosh. The Rockefellers are the population control enthusiasts of population control enthusiasts. And they have given tons and tons and tons of money to organizations like Planned Parenthood. In fact, the grantor, the first grant that they gave was to Margaret Sanger in the amount of $10,000. And when they did it, the grantor, the head of the organization at that time, said, "Personally, I believe the problem of population constitutes one of the greatest perils of the future. And if something is not done along the lines that these people, Planned Parenthood, are suggesting, we shall hand down to our children a world in which the scramble for food and the means of subsistence will be far more bitter than anything we know at the present." Really? We're going to run out of food? Really? Come on now. God said, "Be fruitful and multiply." But the Rockefellers said, "No, we don't want y'all multiplying. And we're going to give money to Margaret Sanger," who said, "Yeah, we especially don't want you black folk multiplying, because y'all are a bunch of weeds and misfits." So that's how we've gotten to abortion. Those four key people were the instruments used to push an agenda of birth control in this nation. But that's not the beginning of the issue for black people. You know, from the time we first were brought here as slaves, we have been treated as something other than people. Although you could look at us and see, well, do I look like a person? Okay. I thought so, but you know. So in the beginning, we had the slave codes, and the slave codes basically define the status of black people in this country. It said, "Y'all ain't people, you are property." But then they had that pesky question, because even though we weren't people, the slave owners wanted to sleep with black women. And so they had their way. And as they had their way, we did what all people of the female persuasion do. We got pregnant. So then the question became, well, what are we going to do with these children whose daddies are the slave owners, but their mothers are a slave? So the slave codes developed rules that said, well, if the baby is born to a slave, black slave woman, then the baby is a slave. Goes according to the mother's status, not to the father's status. And these codes were all over the South. Everywhere you look, you had slave codes like this. And then the fight came politically. Politics is ugly and nasty. And so the South now had all these slaves, right, that they said weren't people. Until it came to deciding how many congressional representatives you were going to have, And then, of course, the black people are people. Well, some well-meaning legislators said, you know what, if we let the South do that, then they're going to have more representation in Congress than the rest of the country, so we're not going to let them count their slaves as whole people. We'll only count them as three-fifths of a person. It was done for apportionment. Thank God they did it, because if they hadn't, I'd probably still be a slave today, right? But what it did was, again, remove the humanity of the black man and the woman and made us property. So that's 22 people in that picture. I actually counted them. There were 22. But because they were only counted as three-fifths of a person, they only counted as 13. That's what apportionment did. But at the same time that these legislators were trying to end slavery and the abolitionist movement began, we had our wonderful Supreme Court. And I'm still trying to figure out why these 9 men have more power than anybody else in the country to define what happens to a group of people. So, our dear Supreme Court, bless their hearts, did the Dred Scott decision. Now, you all know Dred Scott, right? In the Dred Scott decision, the court said that people and citizens were synonymous. So since black people were not citizens because they were property, they were not people because they were property. They couldn't be a citizen because citizen and people are synonymous. And so they said Dred Scott couldn't sue because he wasn't a citizen. And he wasn't a citizen because he wasn't really a person. He was property. The court that did that were all Democrats. And it was a 7-2 decision. 2 Democrats dissented in that decision. One of them, the Chief Justice, was a Catholic. So our belief system really hasn't controlled, because each and every one of these people said they were some kind of Christian believer, and yet they voted that Dred Scott was not a citizen, including Chief Justice Taney, who was Catholic. So, what did our Congress do? They came back, had a constitutional convention, they established the 13th Amendment that ended slavery in 1865. But they went even further, and in 1866, they had a Civil Rights Act that said that any person born in the United States, regardless of their race or their color or previous condition of slavery, that they were, in fact, citizens and they were, in fact, persons, right? Whoops, back up, wait a minute. And then we had the 14th Amendment, wonderful 14th Amendment that said, we're going to provide equal protection and citizenship to every citizen, person of these United States of America without regard to their race, their color, their religion, their national origin, any of the stuff that we could conjure up, right? Then they went even further and they had, did you know we had that many Civil Rights Acts? I didn't. But we had the Civil Rights Act of 1871 that President Grant requested to rein in the Ku Klux Klan during the Reconstruction era. And then we had the Civil Rights Act of 1875 that guaranteed blacks equal protection in public transportation, in public accommodations, and it required the government not to exclude us from jury service. So, how in the world did we end up with Plessy versus Ferguson? Because the very thing that the Civil Rights Act of 1875 guaranteed, Plessy took away. And they said, well, okay, y'all might be people, but y'all ain't equal people. Right? It was a 7-1 decision. Again, all but one confessed to some belief in God. There was one agnostic, Justice Brown. And this time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the justices were Republican. First court that took away rights was all Democrat. Now we got 7 Republicans. Now, haven't we been fighting hard to make sure that we elect Republicans, presidents, and senators who are going to confirm that Roe v. Wade should be overturned? We've been relying on the Supreme Court, and here's a court that's mostly Republican that still went along with taking away personhood from black people. So then we had the Civil Rights Act of 1957, and that act attempted to enforce the Brown v. Board of Ed decision that said, well, okay, we can't let you not be equal for terms of education, so okay, you can be equal. But again, why do we have to keep having these civil rights acts to enforce what is already the law of the land through the Constitution? It's a mystery to me. It's a real mystery. So from 1957, after Brown v. Board of Ed, you know, I had a debate with someone on email about whether or not Brown v. Board of Ed legally ended segregation in this country. And this person was very offended with me that I didn't know that Brown v. Board of Ed ended segregation in this country. Did y'all know Brown v. Board of Ed ended segregation? Because I told them, my parents didn't get the memo. So when we went south as a kid, you know, our vacation was to go, I was born and raised in Connecticut, was to go to Virginia to the family homestead to see grandma, granddad, and all the 900 aunts and uncles that I had, right? We would get to the Maryland house in Maryland, and my parents would stop and they would feed us, and they would run us around that Maryland house, and then they would make us go to the bathroom because they knew once we crossed that line that we were not going to stop until we got to the family homestead at the other end of Virginia. So they wanted to make sure we were so tired we would go to sleep and they could just make that ride and not have to worry about were we going to get lynched or some other such thing as we were driving through Virginia. And so I don't know what Brown v. Board of Ed did, but it didn't end legal segregation because it wasn't until the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Now, what happened from the beginning until 1964, from slavery till 1964, the culture was no longer willing to tolerate the legal disparity in treatment of people based on the color of their skin. And the culture rose up and said, enough. So we got the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Many of us saw Emmett Till and saw what happened to him in the South. We saw his bruised and battered body because his mother refused to close that casket. She said, America needs to see what racism has done. And so we had a cultural movement to end legalized discrimination in America. But what did our dear sweet Supreme Court do? They came up with Roe v. Wade. And what really makes me angry is that they used the very law that the Constitution, the constitutional amendment, to justify and take away the personhood of the baby in the womb. And they went so far as to very clearly say, they very clearly said, if it was established that the unborn is a person, then it's entitled to the protection of the 14th Amendment and your case would collapse, right? And Sarah Weddington, who had never really worked as a lawyer before she argued before the Supreme Court, says, yeah, I'd have a very difficult case. So we have the court case itself telling us that the answer to end this is personhood. Is the baby a person? I think it's a person. There's no other species on the earth that calls a baby in the womb other than what it is. We don't call a baby puppy a fetus. We don't call a baby elephant a fetus. So why are we as human beings trying to objectify the baby? It's because we go back to Darwin. We go back to some people not being worthy of life, some people not having value. Now, y'all would look at me and say, yeah, but there are millions of white babies that are dying too. And you're right. And they're willing to sacrifice your white babies in order to get to the black babies. And it was a 7-2 decision. And once again, our Republican brethren, the ones that we've been ensured by the legislature, if we just get Republican presidents to appoint Republicans to the Supreme Court, then we'll have the chance of overturning Roe v. Wade. Really? There you see it, 7-2. 7-2. So despite the court acknowledging that the Constitution does not have anything in it that's called a right to privacy, how many of you have read the Constitution? Y'all ever seen anything in there that said you have a right to privacy? It's not in there. They created a fictitious right. They took the very law that was designed to guarantee the right to life, the 14th Amendment, for all people, and they use that to create a fictitious right of privacy so that the mother could kill her children. So they subordinated the right of the baby to the right of the mother. And they gave her a right that didn't exist before 1973. And they said, the baby is not a person. And they went through that whole discussion. If you read the case, they talked about viability. And they said, well, once the baby is big enough that it's viable, then the states have a compelling reason to regulate it. And they said that states could design laws to limit when abortions could occur, right? But then they very quietly passed Doe v. Bolton, which took away any restriction with regard to when a baby could be killed. So in those states like New York City that doesn't really regulate abortion, you could be in your 9th month really and say, I want to kill it, and it would be legal because of Doe v. Bolton. So politics has allowed abortion to stay alive in this country. We've made it such a political issue that abortion is thriving all around the country. In fact, today we had some people tried to come in and demand abortion on demand, and they were screaming all kind of crazy things. I don't know how many of you saw it. I thank God for pro-life men, because I watch those brothers very quickly. I don't even know where they came from, but all of a sudden there was this wall of pro-life men that said, not here, and they just very quietly and calmly walked back those people right back out the door. It was so cool. I wish y'all had seen it. But the Supreme Court has said that the mother's right to privacy is greater than the baby's right to life. How can that be? They said if it's a person, then it's entitled to 14th Amendment protection. Well, you can see that a baby is a person. It's not a mystery. Especially today with the 4D ultrasound. Boy, I saw this girl's 4D ultrasound, and I tell you the truth, that baby looked just like her. It was so clear. It was so very sharp and crystal clear. And so, but they have said, nope, it's not a baby. I mean, it's not a person, so we can just kill it, kill it, kill it. And the impact has been to deny the life to 58 million children in this country. 58 million, that number is unfathomable to me. We think about the Holocaust. 11 million people were killed in the Jewish Holocaust. Six of those 11 were Jews, right? We have 58 million. And what breaks my heart is that 35, I think the number is much, much higher than that, percent of those babies were black babies. Now, Planned Parenthood has placed their abortuaries. Whoops, gotta go back. I'm sorry, before I go to Planned Parenthood. Just recently, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, boy, she just tells everything. In 2009, she told us very clearly that Roe v. Wade was the case that allowed us to get rid of the babies we didn't want too many of. It was her understanding. New York Times Magazine interview, 2009, Google it, Place of Women on the Court. But just a week or two ago, she did an interview with MSNBC. And she said that she does not foresee Roe v. Wade being overturned, because the court is highly precedent bound. So she's telling us they are not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. That breaks my heart, but I never looked to the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade anyway. Because they're not going to undo what they did. There are these men believe, and now women believe, that it is okay to take a life of a baby for population control reasons. They are happy that 58 million people have died. Why? Because they're scared they're going to run out of food. Well, who's going to run out of food? The rich people? Because it's the elites that are pushing this agenda, right? Anyway. Black babies in particular don't count. A few years ago, don't play it yet. A few years ago, Georgia Right to Life, who I worked for when we did that awesome billboard campaign that said black children are an endangered species. With that campaign, there was a companion bill. That was the best piece of pro-life legislation that I have ever seen in my life. Not because I was a part of it, but just because it was. The law was Senate Bill 529, and it said if the motive for the abortion was the race or gender of the child, or if the abortion was due to coercion, then that doctor, and the doctor knew it, then he or she could be prosecuted as a felony. I love that. Let's lock them up, right? It also had in there a provision under the RICO statutes that if abortion providers were colluding together to control the birth rate of any group, they could be prosecuted under the RICO statutes, just like they prosecute the pro-life community under the FACE Act, right? It's a RICO law saying, you pro-lifers, you're colluding together and we're going to stop you, right? So we said, well, why not have our own law that did that? Best piece of legislation. That bill went through so much up and down and around and twisted. We had committee hearings. It passed the committee hearings. We're thinking it's going to go to the Rules Committee for a vote on the floor. And the Speaker of the House says, no, no, no. And he puts it back in a completely different committee to try to kill it. But the legislators were too cowardly to come out and say that they didn't want this bill to pass. So they passed it. And then suddenly, I began to hear all these whispers. I will never forget it as long as I live. I was in Texas, and I had gone to a conference to speak in Texas, and Dan Becker, my friend, calls me and says, they're whispering about the bill. They're whispering what, Dan? They're calling it the Black Baby Bill. What are you talking about, the Black Baby Bill? Many of the legislators wanted race taken out of the bill because they said if their daughters were raped by a black man, they wanted to have the ability to abort that baby. These were our Republican legislators. I got so upset, and I was pacing up and down in the hotel where the conference was, and I was just... I was so angry, and God slapped me upside my head and said, you're just as racist as they are. Because I was saying, God, I'm just tired of this. I'm tired of people always wanting to kill black people. What did we do to them? Why do they always want to kill black people? God, why are you letting this happen? And he said, shut up. He said, you're just as racist as them. I'm not looking at your skin color. And he said, now go in there. Now understand, I was the only chocolate drop in the group. He said, go in there and publicly repent. I'm like, for real? He's like, yeah. I'm like, dang God, do I have to? He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. So I go, and I had to repent because my heart was just as dark. If what I was going to allow to control me was white people wanting to kill black people, that made me just as racist. And God said, I can't use you like that. I need you to be free. And so I did. I repented. My bill got killed by one man, but I believe it was all of them. And they were happy that the Speaker of the House wouldn't let that bill out of committee. Because even the media told us, if that bill hits the floor, it's going to pass. And the Speaker of the House, his name is David Ralston, killed the bill because of the black baby. Right? Well, in 2012, Congressman Trent Franks offered the PRENDA bill, Pregnancy Non-Discrimination Act bill, that said, that again, talked about the motive for the abortion being race or gender. And Congress was going to vote on the bill. And I was in Connecticut. I'm never home when this stuff happens. I'm always traveling, but I was in Connecticut. It was my birthday. congressman's assistant called me and said, the congressman wants to know, can you get on the call with him at 4 o'clock? And I said, no. Whatever it is he wants to tell me can wait till after my birthday. It's my birthday. I want to have a happy birthday. And I know he's getting ready to tell me something I don't want to hear. And she was like, no, he really needs you on the call, Catherine. You must be on the call. Will you get on the call? So I capitulated, and I got on the call. And once again, our illustrious congressman in Washington, D.C., said Trent Frank's bill had to pull race out of it. And they only had gender in the bill. And then they killed that bill and would not let it pass, saying it's okay. So I'm wondering, you know how we have these exceptions? And every time there's a pro-life bill, they want to throw in rape or incest. I'm wondering if that's a euphemism for race, that our white legislators are afraid that some black man's going to want to rape their daughter, and when that happens, he wants to have the ability to kill that baby. Now, I haven't heard a black man raping, black men raping white women. I'm sure it's happened somewhere because men are stupid. But I have heard tons. I mean, my history is replete with white men raping black women. Really, legislator? You really think that some black man is just waiting around the corner just to jump on your daughter so you feel like you have to have abortion legal so that you can kill your grandchild? Is that what you're trying to tell us? You're trying to tell us that the method of conception of the life that God ordained is so important that it weighs more than the life of that innocent human being who's done nothing? You know, I would ask my friend Rebecca, or I would ask my friend Ryan Bomberger, whether or not they feel like rape and incest should be an exception. And then I would ask the 35 million black babies that have died if they feel like there should be exceptions. We should not have any. So, we have genocide going on in America today that is worse than any Jewish Holocaust or anything that Hitler did in Germany. In fact, you know what? Hitler's people during the Nuremberg trials told the prosecutors that they learned eugenics from Americans. That the stuff that they were doing, the gassing of the patients, the forced sterilization, we heard Saul Pichons yesterday talking about how his Mengele removed one of his mother's ovaries, but being the coward that he was, he ran away when America started bombing them. So she was able to keep one of her ovaries because the doctor that was left behind told her, I'm not going to complete the operation for him. Worse than all of what we hear about Nazi Germany is the genocide that's happening every single day in America. In New York City, for every 1,000 black babies born alive, 1,489 are aborted. That's depopulation. That's genocide. And New York's not alone. In every major city across the nation, the numbers that are coming out of black babies being killed is disproportionately greater than every other ethnicity in the country. Now, before 1944, the word genocide didn't exist. But there was a Polish Jewish lawyer that was trying to describe the Nazi policies and the impact that they had. And he defined genocide from combining the Greek word for race or tribe, geno, with the Latin word for killing, side. And there are abortionists in this nation today that don't mind committing genocide. We can show that video now if I can get to.
Adopt
those babies, okay? Take them off the taxpayers' money, okay?
Give us a chance to adopt them.
Did you hear what he said? He said, then who's going to adopt those ugly black babies? He's aborting them so they won't be on the taxpayers' dole. We don't want them on the taxpayers' dole. Who's going to take care of those ugly black babies? And so Operation Save America workers said, well, give them to us. You know, give them to us. We'll take them. This is an abortion doctor that just got arrested recently for raping somebody. But he didn't care. And it's the same thing. Can I go to the next? I don't know where my slides went. He doesn't care. What he cares more about is killing black babies. And the other side of the abortion coin is that they're killing black women as well. It's not just the babies. In many instances, they're getting two for one. Right here in Cleveland, a young lady was killed at preterm abortion center that's not too far from here. Even in death, they would not let her have dignity, because when they brought her out of that abortion center, they brought her out naked from the waist up. She was 22 years old. They rushed her to the hospital. They hooked her up to life support. Why? So they could harvest her organs. They didn't hook her up to save her life. They hooked her up so they could harvest her organs, because somehow they knew she had signed something someplace that said she would donate her organs. In Chicago, Illinois, Tanya Reeves. Lakeisha Wilson is the young lady that was killed here. Tanya Reeves is the young lady that was killed in Chicago at a Planned Parenthood on 18th South Michigan Avenue. Planned Parenthood went into Tanya's uterus 3 times. They kept her inside their facility for 5 hours. Tanya should not be dead. When they botched the abortion, rather than calling an ambulance to take her out, they held her there, scraped her uterus 2 more times, still didn't successfully complete the abortion, and then they took her less than 2 miles down the road to the trauma center 5 hours later, too little, too late, and Tanya died. Something is broken in our nation, and we must rise up and change the culture from a political culture to a moral culture and say no more. So there is an act before Congress right now. We don't need to have a constitutional convention. The 14th Amendment already says who a person is. So we don't need an amendment. We need to do what we did with the Civil Rights Act, like we did with the Civil Rights Act. There's the Sanctity of Human Life Act that was offered by one of the Georgia congressmen and was joined by all of the Republican Georgia congressmen, not the Democrats, that talks about the sanctity of human life. We need that law passed, and we need that law passed now. Because Planned Parenthood has launched their Negro Project, and they don't mind killing black people, and they don't mind paying black people to be against black people. How many of you know who Tim Tebow is? See, y'all know Tim Tebow. I had no idea who Tim Tebow was, because I'm not a sports person. So I didn't know. So a few years ago, two, 3 years ago, Family Research Note, Focus on the Family, paid for a commercial. Nobody knew what the commercial was going to say until they aired it during the Super Bowl. But it was going to be aired to the Super Bowl. So Planned Parenthood, in anticipation for what they thought Tim Tebow's mama was going to say, because Tim Tebow's mama had been a missionary to the Philippines, and she contracted a parasite that the doctors told her was going to kill her, kill the baby, and she should abort. And she said, I am not aborting. My child's life is in God's hands. My life is in God's hands. And so if we perish, we perish. But I'm not going to abort my child. So Planned Parenthood thought she was, the commercial was going to be her affirming life. So they hired two actors to talk about being strong black women, right? They hired Sean James and Al Joyner. I didn't know who Sean James and Al Joyner was either, because I'm not a sports person. But these two black men get on this commercial and they say, you know, it's okay to be a strong black woman. You know, Tim Tebow and his mama, you know, we know that they are blessed people, they're special people, but it's okay if you be a strong black woman, because I want my child to have a choice. Now, the last time I looked, Tim Tebow and his mama were white. Why did they hire Sean James and Al Joyner to do their commercial? Because they are marketing to the black community. And they want black women to feel like it's okay to be strong and black and kill your babies. That makes you strong. That makes you a better black woman. Right? In last year, during Black History Month, they Planned Parenthood, honored 98 black movers and shakers. Every single person that they honored had something to do with the media, entertainment, those fields that would reach deep into the black community to encourage abortion. But now it's time for justice and righteousness to meet. Now it's time that we really start talking about justice. And I'm not talking about hands up in Ferguson. I'm talking about hands up at the abortion centers where they are wholesale slaughtering little black babies every day. We must. We must adopt personhood. We must stop fritzing around. And let me just say this. I am not against incremental legislation. They told us that a woman's right to know, that 24-hour waiting period, that what are some of the other laws that we have? Ultrasound bill. We're going to help slow down abortion. And it has. In the Caucasian community, but the numbers are increasing in the black community because they are marketing to the black community. And so we must stop Planned Parenthood, who has located 79% of their abortion facilities within a 2-mile walking radius of a black or Latino neighborhood. Go to protectingblacklife.org, and you can go all the way down to street level and see where they are locating those abortion clinics. Why? Because they're implementing the Negro Project, and the Negro Project is having a genocidal impact in the black community, and we can't sit back and let it continue. And the only way that I can foresee, and God forgive me if I'm wrong, us quickly ending this, because guess what? We don't have another 42 years to futz around with this, because we are talking about a matter of life and death. So we must stop this now. And personhood can very quickly stop it all around this country. So I don't know how many of you have read my book, but in each chapter, at the end of each chapter, I give action items and tell you what you need to do. Let me give you a couple of action items. We got to pray, because this thing is so deeply entrenched in the culture right now that unless God moves with us, we're not going to succeed, because it's so deeply entrenched. But then you got to tell somebody. You got to support the work of Cleveland Right to Life. You can't just leave it languishing. It's not enough to come to a conference and we pat each other on the back about how great things are and how great it is to be pro-life. No, we've got to take this to the street. We've got to change the culture. Not our politicians, the culture. Because the politicians are going to do what the culture demands. And that's how... that's how slavery ended, that's how Jim Crow ended, and now let's end abortion in Jesus' name. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Catherine Davis, public speaker and civil rights champion.